Hello and welcome back to the F24 podcast. My name is David, and each week, as I'm sure you know, I invite a creative over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London, culture and creativity. We're going to have a bit of a different one this week. I started working on this idea about 2 years ago. I love podcasts and I love my culture, and I know most of you know that. And, you know, thinking about all the people we got about, I thought we got some amazing stories out there. Let's get my shit together and record some. I got Jack Murray round, Will Robson Scott, Adney Gilman, Dun London, Jamal Peace, all in summer 2016. They're all the early ones in the series. But you know what? It took me over a year to put them out. Anxiety, confidence, and making my business and work more important than feeding my soul all came into play. And I just couldn't justify spending the time it would take to do this. I just stored the recordings. Then Yan passed away in late December 2017. I'd known him since the 90s. Properly. It fucking hit hard. The funeral was a few weeks later and I went with my friend and fellow Northwest Sixer, Sam. It was great to see all these people come and pay respects to Yan. A tearful and yet joyous event full of stories, memories, laughs and tears. He touched a crazy amount of people. We walked his coffin down Kilburn High Road, locked it off. There were so many of us. A beautiful but really sad day. Pretty soon after the funeral, I decided I was going to do these interviews and get this podcast thing going. And I did. I had wanted Yan round to chat on the original run. I should have had him round in 2016-17. But life is what it is, and at the time, I wasn't sure I was going to do this podcast thing at all. Him going let me know I needed to do this. He pretty much did everything he put his mind to, in whatever fashion, and I was going to do the same. Around 2-3 weeks after the funeral, I had around that time, heard the final Combat Jack podcast. That's one I'd been listening to for about 7 odd years. Combat had passed from cancer and Dallas Penn, A. King, Premium Pete, Just Blaze, Ben Hameen and a few other of his colleagues and friends got together to talk about Combat, his accomplishments, his life and his work. I thought, you know what? That'll be dope for Yan. Bringing us to this week, which is a special episode, as you have a glimpse into Yan's life through one of his best mates, his crew partner, his travelling companion, festival goer and party starter, Jack. We recorded this in early July. It was tough, especially on Jack. But we told stories, we had laughs, and we remembered our friend. This is some of Yan's London culture and creativity story. We miss you, brother. Enjoy. This is F24.
Yeah, I mean, the funeral in the wake was like, up until that point, it was just like, intense. Mate, it was like life on limbo. Like life literally went full stop, you know, and yeah. the wake for me, like the funeral and the wake was like a big relief, but then after that it was like I needed to like properly get some headspace, because on a run up to it, it's just, you know,
2 weeks of madness.
Yeah, it was a month and a half is through after he passed away, and then like it was, wasn't you it? Know just kind of it was always something else to sort out, obviously, and it's just like didn't really have chance to kind of reflect on it or even work out what you think about it, do you know what I'm saying? So that was kind of good for me, and after that it was just I needed to get away from things, but you know. Yeah,
so you, what the run up to it, you just had to accept the situation and be there and do what needed doing. And then afterwards you got a chance to sit down and be like, oh shit.
Yeah, and
I mean, of course you said oh shit beforehand, but I mean
and like I had like a heavily pregnant wife. Do you know what I'm saying? My baby was born just before Yan's funeral. Do you know what I'm saying? So it was all just like everything, just mad. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, you're just sitting there, it's like kind of couldn't make sense of it. And you have a duty to like at least talk to people about it.
Well,
you're not duty bound, but like, you know, in terms of me and Yan's relationship over the years and point of reference through ATG, only after I could kind of actually, you know, take stock of like what was going on. But I guess that's how it is when someone passes close to you, isn't it?
It's an amazing service though.
Yeah,
and lovely to see all those people.
Yeah, but yeah, it couldn't really like have gone much better.
The high road.
Yeah, I mean, the high road was like, that was like a happy moment.
Yeah.
You know, that was a proper euphoric, happy moment. And like, you never think that you'd get that in the midst of like something quite like very tragic.
Mm.
And that kind of lost, but I guess, you know, it's just like the sun shining and everyone there and the fact that, you know, the highway was bombed up and everything was just like, if, you know, you were going to pass, that's how you'd want it. Like, you know that Jan would have been like proper, like, you would have liked to see that.
I've said it to a couple of people, man. Yeah. I'm from Kilburn. Like, I've only ever seen that happen for like OGs, like proper,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. well-respected community members of a certain type.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, Jan wasn't that guy, but he was so loved.
Yeah.
You know, it just happened though, didn't it? I don't even think it was planned, was it? It just happened.
We just decided to walk. Yeah. I mean, obviously the walk was planned, but the stopping traffic thing wasn't planned. And the kind of reaction that it got, you know, everything kind of like came together for it.
You know, it was obviously a really sad day, obviously. That part, and then at the burial, when they lowered the coffin, they lowered his coffin in, and then Matt, just from the back of the crowd, just was like, hang on, he needs his ice.
Yeah.
And I literally, I loved that bit, man. Because he just changed the whole thing. And for a good reason as well. And yeah, he had a little story about why the ice had to be there. And it made that bit a bit lighter as well, I thought. It was...
Yeah.
A really quiet place, and everyone was, you know, really solemn. And then Matt just,
I mean, it was an amazing moment. Like, and I think, like, burying him and all being there together is so important. And like, I'm really glad that, you know, Jan's mum and family like wanted to bury him. You know, that she explained her reasons, which made perfect sense, and also just for the community to actually understand the cycle of these things and the reality of it. Because, you know, as I say, on a run up to his send off, the amount of conversations I had with people, you know, and especially the first couple of weeks after something like that happens, it's chaos, you know, like emotional chaos. And you talk to one person one day and they're like, they're sounding like they've made sense of it and they're calm, and then you chat to someone else and they're losing their mind over it, and a lot of speculation, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of, you know, it's just so much confusion. And I think after a while, you know, like, I had to stop talking on the phone to people about it because it would trigger my emotions in the wrong way, when, you know, and that's what was basically happening, is everyone triggering each other, like
bouncing, you know, off each other.
Yeah.
And you were standing there strong for quite a long time, and then obviously it's going to affect you at some point as well, man.
Of course. And, you know, someone will be strong for a bit and then it's going to take their toll on it. And I think with me, it's like only until after the his funeral where I could kind of like let emotion out and all the rest and have a bit of kind of time to think about it. But the burial, it was just everyone who is having this communication on a build up to it was suddenly like, well, we now all know what's happened.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's also not, we're not hearing, we're seeing. We're fully seeing. Fully that's taking what I this mean. In.
We know, and we're all here, his family's here, we're all here, the sun's out, we're in, do you know what I mean? We're in Kilburn in the cemetery, and this is it, you know. And I think there was something that was definitely like therapeutic about that. Mm. And something which I won't forget about Jan and his story, you know, because like it's no solace to people closest to him, especially not his immediate family, but you know, we do all go at some point, and like we all know people that have passed away and they haven't had that.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Many and people, man.
Maybe they just, their close family and friends did a few tribute posts online, or if their funeral was quite understated, and then that was that, and then their family just get on with trying to remember them or like cope. Whereas I think with Jan, you know, that was one thing which is like, well, his send off did his life justice. You know
it did,
mean?
And not to say that everyone else's or other people's send offs don't do their lives justice. In some cases, it's just not possible.
No.
What had happened for Jan may have been down to timing, and may have been down to, there's a lot of aspects of the reasons why, and also Jan being him. Mm. And but I know what you're saying, like, in some cases people go and it isn't as big a celebration as what it could be.
Yeah.
But that's how life is, man.
Yeah, of course.
But
and it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's gone, and when you're gone, you like, you know, depending on your beliefs, you don't see that.
No.
You don't see that send off, do you know what I
mean?
No. And so it's more of a thing for the community around that person anyway.
Always is.
Yeah.
Always is. Unless there is some spiritual shit we don't know about, or the reasons why we have burials, yeah, because there is something that happens, mm-hmm, we don't know as people walking on the planet.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Yeah, great day, man. Great day. The emotion hit me quite soon after. It hadn't actually happened beforehand.
Mm.
It was after the funeral for me as well.
Yeah.
I think just seeing people as well and.
Yeah, well, I think you've got like a lot to factor in and prepare for ahead of something like that.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And
that can take up mind space.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And like, you know, with me, like when Jan passed, I straight away kind of switched on to like do things. Do you know what I mean? Try and like wanting to be sorted, do things, because I just thought, well, what else is there to do right now? And you know, I was looking around, it's just there was such a sense of urgency. And I think like sometimes, you know, that can be a good thing, sometimes not, but I've, you know, like it's hard to know because there's so much uncharted territory. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like you might have lost, so me personally, you know, I've lost friends before Jan, but less close to, you know, like being a bit distant from them, and it was sad, but not like didn't mm-hmm. really knock me off my feet. Or older family members,
yeah,
where it's a bit more expected, I guess, even if in like, you know, tragic circumstances. And I think with something like with Jan, you're really unlucky if you have something like that more than once in your lifetime. Do you know what I'm saying? In terms of someone who's so important to a big, big, big group of people in London, so important culturally to a big group of people, to pass away like in his prime or in her prime, you know, is like something that no one really knew that much about how to deal with.
No.
You know?
And it was quite fresh for everyone.
Yeah.
For someone with that much impact.
Yeah.
Because you had to deal with in the weeks on the run up to the funeral, the amount of people that were calling you, the amount of people that needed a shoulder because of the impact Jan had.
Yeah.
Unlike, and we've got other friends that have, we've got another shared friend that passed away, that didn't happen in that sense.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't as many people on the knockoff.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it was. This was brand new for a lot of people. The amount, you know. So when I heard, and my friend told me, I then thought about my other friend, who knew him,
mm-hmm,
and you were doing the same. And so, yeah, because this was very new.
Yeah,
it wasn't like my mum died, God forbid, but my mum died, and then so it's me, and I'm thinking of my son,
mm-hmm,
and like how we're going to deal with this, and my girlfriend. Yeah. Whereas this was a fucking like,
yeah,
one of the biggest families like to pull in, and
yeah. And many, and a lot of people are still very much in that stage of life around him of like real hedonism. Do you know what I'm saying? And like to try and compute that information
whilst
you're kind of still of that like mindset of every life's a party, and life is a party for some people if you're lucky enough.
And this is how I live it. I live it by being hedonistic.
Yeah. And so there was that as well, you know, that kind of aspect to it. But it was incredible. Like I remember in the days after, of just my phone just constantly blowing up, you know, like throughout the night and stuff. And it just the area code, the switch from like fucking America, Australia, like Europe, you know, it was just
constant.
Mad. It was like, right, well, my phone was evidence of just like how many people we touched around the world, you know. And I think it kind of made it more difficult in some ways to deal with what happened in peace, but also like it's, you know,
It's when you know that that many people have been affected by it, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah.
You just know. Like, fuck. More and more and more. And although it is like, wow, amazing, look how many people he touched. At the same time, it's like, shit, look how many people are in pain.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, look, let's start at the beginning with Jan. We'll talk about where he's from.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jan was born and raised in South Kilburn. He was born at home.
Oh, was he born at home?
Yeah.
I think I caught that. Actually.
Solvig.
Yeah.
And and that's where he lived until he passed away.
30 years.
Yeah. 32 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And do you know what school he went to?
He went to Hampstead School.
Yeah. Oh, he's at Hampstead, yeah.
And
he must have met a lot of people. Yeah. There's a load
So he was at Hampstead, and I was at Akron Burley. So mm-hmm. they're both quite similar schools in the northwest.
In terms of ethos area. Of education and so on, and the type of people that go there.
Yeah, kind of like mixed state schools, you know, like.
Mixed strong state
emphasis
schools.
On
arts and creativity.
Arts and that. Yeah, yeah. And there was like. There was actually a bit of a bridge between the two schools with Graff and like certain writers that would paint from around Kilburn or Swiss Cottage or West Hampstead, or, you know, and then it would kind of go over to like Queen's Crescent, Kentish Town, Tufnell Park, Archway. There was a bit of a lineage there of writers, and people would go to each other's schools, you know, hang outside and all the rest. So like there was that. But then I met Jan when I was, I would say, 14. Yeah, I was 14 years old.
Where'd you meet him?
I met him in the home base in Finchley Road. Yeah, in the car park outside there. Yeah.
By the Jubilee Lounge, right?
Yeah, there. So, like, me and Rest were there. And I think Dr. G was there as well. And Jan was, I can't remember exactly who. I know Evan was with him, I think. And we were skating at the time. Down there, and like you could be able to go into the back of home base and throw the cans over the garden centre bit and stuff like that. So that was basically our fucking area of just like messing around at that age. And obviously that's Finchley Road, so like that was like a couple stops up from Gospel Oak where we were based, and then Jan's
same
a couple, yeah, it's yeah. like equidistant, you know what I mean, over towards Kilburn, Brunsbury or whatever. So like. And then I remember, like, I think Evan came over and was chatting to us about skating, and then Jan saw I had, like, a reach on my skateboard, and he was like, did the classic, would you write, yeah. And I remember him having, like, that proper boss persona. He wasn't giving anything away. At 14.
Exactly.
Not giving anything away. Yeah. All his mates were all like, well, can you kick flip? And he wasn't going to like do the chat for a little bit. You know,
he'd learned. He'd already learned.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
He got it probably from Robbie.
Yeah, probably.
Watching people in Robbie's ass.
Yeah, but I remember instantly like being struck by how how serious he was. Do you know what I'm saying? Obviously, you get to know someone better, it all changes. But like from that first kind of interaction, he was like,
you win this game,
asset one. And we're like, all right, cool. He's like, we told him what we wrote or whatever, and he's like, I think I've seen some bits. So, yeah.
Were you writing what you write?
And then he was like, come round the back of home base and check my stuff or whatever. And then like he just pointed out his tag, and he pointed out some like almost like semi wild style outline thing he'd done, which to this day would still be credited as like very good graffiti. Sick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was 14 going on 15 probably. And I think like from that point, we worked out, we had some mutual friends, and like there was certain houses in the area where people would always go to like pick up weed or whatever, and then just sit there and hang out and smoke zoots, and then like that's how everyone would, loads of writers would
cross paths that way.
You'd never really know who would come in to buy a draw from there and sit there, and so it was a lot like that. It was like a go-to place, and So then, yeah, and then from that point, it was like Rest and Asset formed the friendship first, really.
Do you know what years these were?
This would be, this is the year 2000.
2000,
yeah. This is the year 2000. And then I wasn't really painting that much then. Even though I started in the late 90s, I kind of stopped and, yeah, I was just doing other shit. And then Rest got really active and started doing his little dubs around the place, and Jan had seen them, but like Rest didn't have the style that Jan did. But Jan was very, Rest was already going out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
He was going further than his mano as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas Asset was very much like
Northwest at that time.
Styler.
Yeah, you know? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For us, it was like coming from Tufnell Park and around there. There was obviously like really good graph to look at, but it was definitely the aim was much more to do like simple dubs. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like,
and he wasn't.
Well, no, Asset had this thing which, like, we, you know, obviously at that time there wasn't like social media or the internet wasn't flying around that much. And there wasn't really like a way of learning about like style in West London beyond going there sometimes at skating or whatever. And I remember when we met Jan, it was like, oh shit, he's like our age, but he's got like a proper like West London flair to what he's doing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Hand style, pieces.
Hand style, everything like proper.
Colours.
Like, yeah, yeah. And like, for us, it changed what, you know, the kind of, it raised the bar in terms of what we thought someone should be able to do at our age.
Yeah.
Because we were still just trying to lock down very simple chrome and black dubs. And yeah.
Was that because of his early years at Robbie's?
Yeah.
Or had he met Pulse by then?
I think he might have met Pulse at that stage, but definitely Robbie.
Robbie's.
SHK.
Yeah.
Were a massive influence on him. And then I guess you had like VFL and people a lot more around there. I think there was a lot more. West London, when we started, had most of the colour pieces still, I think.
Yeah.
The trackside productions and things like that. And the big walls underneath the Westway.
Well,
and like productions were definitely something that I mainly saw in West London.
Yeah, VFL and boys were killing that stuff. Mace and all them lot. But that I think that's because they had more overground lines.
Yeah.
We only had the overground. We had the overground running through North London. And the Jubilee went out.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, it was different. Because if you were jumping on the Jubilee and going north, you knew you were leaving town. Whereas if you were riding around west on the Hammersmith City or whatever, you were in town, it felt.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So I think that's why there was so much colour on those sides of town.
Yeah.
Because they had, it was a different, completely different game.
It was.
Seeing him at Robbie's, I remember seeing Jan the first time, must have been 97.
Right.
96, 97 at Robbie's house. And I was like, who the fuck is this kid?
Yeah.
And then he soon went, and I started meeting him every now and then in Robbie's house. But Robbie would tell me, this kid's learning, like he's a writer. And I've heard from other writers.
Yeah.
The same shit, you know.
Yeah.
As a young boy, you'd go up to him and say, would you write?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Whilst at Robbie's house or whatever, or come up the street.
Yeah, yeah.
He got taught. He picked up on it and obviously found the right... Robbie living next door to him was a big...
Yeah.
Big key. Yeah. So, 2000-ish, you start hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And painting.
Mm.
What happened?
Well,
did you form the crew then?
At first, like, I mean, like, Rest was in ATG. I was still doing my own thing, really. Like, hitting up little crews from school and stuff like that. And then Jan kind of like, Jan was friends with Snore and Rage through other connections. He's kind of like, I think they were writing with like Tees and those lot, Snore Tees. And Rage and like Coin. And they were more doing like the kind of North London like bombing thing. Yeah, long story short, is Jan kind of put me and Rest and Snore and Raids together.
He linked you lot up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because ATG was a crew from Hampstead, like a school crew. Do you know what I'm saying? Just didn't really like leave the area, much like the crew that I used to write in Burley. And then it was kind of like, at the time, we all had things that we were doing quite well. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
In terms of new writers and Jan kind of like put us together and was like, we're all going to come under ATG because ATG had the strongest like kind of ring to it, and like acronyms, and like, and Jan's style was undoubtedly like the best at that point. Do you know what I'm
and
saying?
I so suppose just, yeah, just his manner.
He was exactly. He was a born leader. Yeah, know? He was, and he wasn't really like, you know, until I got to know him a bit better. It was always like slightly kind of like revered him, even as a friend. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He'd always be like trying to tiptoe around him and things like that. And
it got to a certain point in my relationship with him, and I felt like that.
Yeah.
And I'm 10 years old, whatever, 6 years older than him, 7 years yeah. older than him.
Yeah, and he had the brilliant way of being able to switch that on and off.
Yeah, and not like, in a rude way either.
No, just, no, no.
I can imagine what it was like in those earlier days, because yeah. he was still trying to get his levels right with you lot.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I guess that kind of effect would like wear thin the longer you know him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To the point
he would
where
drop
it's like,
his...
yeah, you would never bother doing that
anymore. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, whatever.
We're past that. We're in.
Yeah. Like, don't. Yeah. yeah. But like, it's definitely something which he, you know, you need people like that. Mm. You need people like that. Not just to lead the way in situations, but also to kind of like to regulate things sometimes, you know. And it if everyone was too,
do you think it was the graffiti way of life thing he wanted to carry as true as he possibly could?
Yeah. And he was just into that whole, you know, like he was into the thing of legend. You know what I'm saying? And it's like he would continue to talk about certain writers up until he died.
Yeah.
Like that's a legend.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like various people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He loved Scan, for instance.
Yes.
Like Zonk. He loved certain people would always be like, you know, just unwavering
yeah.
to him in terms of like their kind of legendary status because of the game that he liked to play.
Yeah.
Do you know
and
what I'm
he
saying?
Watched yeah, he fully loved that world.
He wanted to be like asset.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? You heard about me, but you might not have met me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You might never meet me.
And he wasn't just painting.
No, exactly.
It wasn't just fun for him and his mates. It wasn't his little
I am doing this, and
I'm doing it to the best because
he didn't find no other reason. A lot of people don't necessarily do that. I don't think I really did that to the same extent, or where you make sure that you're living a certain life outside of graph so that you're kind of
one foot in.
Basically, yeah, but like you've got a legendary status or a way of doing things in your whole life.
Yeah.
It's not just like, I do this and then I paint really sick.
But my life is fucked.
My life isn't like, you know, it's all about being a fucking boss and being that guy, you know? And I think that was the way he was, and that was what was kind of drew you to him, and you kind of felt like you were really part of his world. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or if you were rolling with him, you were part of something that was right now, and it wasn't like, you know, sometimes
Anne was going to leave a mark.
Yeah, Anne was going to leave a mark. You know, like, you know how throughout, say, your career in graph, and I'm sure it applies to other things as well. Sometimes you feel like you're really doing it right now, this is it. Do you know what I'm saying? And then other times you might be painting with other people or working with other people, whatever, and you think, yeah, this is cool, but this isn't it, this isn't right now, this is a stepping stone to something else.
That's
and I'm
it.
Buying
it's the stepping
some time
stone.
Here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those...
Whenever you painted with Jan, it was always like you're right here, right now. Do you know what I'm saying? Right up until the end, that last things I painted with him is like this is living right now. And I think like only some people can carry that and to have that effect.
Over, I wonder what that was,
there.
Man.
Just, I mean, that's. I think he was. You
did
know,
he, did he live in he the minute?
A, yeah, that's what
fully,
he was about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think like he towards the end of his life, he would talk about that kind of. That outlook on life a lot more, but maybe in a slightly more reflective way.
Yeah, he was because he wasn't like fuck the future.
No,
because he was doing too much to ignore the future he was building.
Yeah,
so he wasn't like that. So like,
no.
he did live in the minute, but there seems to be, like you were saying, like just even just his the way he was as a graffiti writer and how much he wanted that stamp down. It was just that next level of stuff. It was something a bit different.
Yeah.
Because he did live in the moment, but not it wasn't as shallow as that.
No.
He knew he was building something as well.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
I remember it must have been, I think it was 2002. I was out at Christmas painting all my dubs as I did. And I was on Finchley Road platform by myself and my fucking phone rang. Shit, and I shit myself. Grab my phone. Yeah. D, it's Jan. What are you doing? He's like, where are you? Can you bring us yard tonight? And I'm like, he goes, are you going to Queen's Park? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not ready yet though. He's like, where are you? He's like, I'm at Finchley Road. He's like, I'll meet you outside. Literally, I goes, all right, I'm finishing up. And I finished up, climbed out, got out, and there he was sitting in the car.
Yeah,
with Rest and Size. Yeah. Size from XL.
Right, yeah, mad. Yeah.
And so Size then drove us down to QP
and
didn't come in. And I brought them two in.
And
Jan done his first panel. I don't know if it was Rest's first panel.
Yeah, might have probably been. Done a few more.
But I'm not sure. Yeah. And got him in. Sick. That was sick. I did a Daz Rose and but it was he had an edge on him that night. That I'll never forget, and because I hadn't painted with him yet, I knew him obviously, and we knew each other, but I'd never painted with him. And he was still a very much. I'd been living in Brighton for 2 years by then, so he was still very much a younger to me.
Yeah, of
6 years didn't mean shit. It was no, you were younger. I've known you since you were a little kid.
Of course, yeah.
I'm a grown man out of home now, type of shit. And I just remember seeing this thing leaving that night. Them lot got in the car and went, and I just knew like right, them two. There's something special right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and they'd already been smashing it. I knew who I was with.
Yeah.
I knew I was with more than Jan.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, wow, this is a...
Yeah.
I thought I was at it.
Yeah.
These lot are at it.
Definitely.
It was a... Definitely. Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, what Jan brought to the table in terms of, like, the dynamic with ATG was just that serious... quality control, you know, and it influenced so many people following on from that era, because Jan got about, you know, but he was definitely more of a Northwest writer.
You know,
he painted all over,
granted,
but he was into whatever he was doing for it to be the best, and like, you know, there was a lot of good stuff at the time going on.
He raised the bar.
Yeah, and you know, there was people really bombing. London's always had people that like really, really bomb. Do you know what I'm saying?
Always
and
had waves of it.
Yeah, because it's a fucking big city to conquer. And I think if you want to really like go at it, you have, you know, it's not like
almost
any other city in Europe where you could get it wrapped up in a much quicker time.
Yeah.
So it's always had that like super determined bombing thing, but like not always... They're like the mixture of like real, like quality technical graffiti and the bombing. Do you know what I'm saying?
And styles the whole way through.
The whole way through, and I think like, you know, I'm at the moment I was looking around, and even one of the last conversations I had with Jan was about how people are painting so many more like color pieces now on tracks, and going on about like the new guys, and it's like.
Yeah.
You know, we should get back out there with them. Do you know what I'm saying? And Jan was like, yeah. Like, we were making a plan to like
go again.
Yeah. Really making a plan, like down to like what was going on in both our lives. When would be a good time to start like doing it? As you do. And it was because he was getting so excited by seeing what was going on now, in comparison to like when we stepped in and were doing things. You know, like. You got to remember that the tracks, they might have had a little light buff sometime in the 90s, but basically almost every single wall in London on the tracks was still brick that it was made in.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there was little
There was
patches.
None of the brown paint.
No, maybe a few sporadic
That happened
patches.
At the Olympics.
That was exactly. It first happened like, 2006, 2007, to get it ready for people to view the city for the Olympics.
Yeah.
And
so when you were hitting
so when we were doing it, and what Jan's whole thing was, which like I just never thought about, nor had Rest ever thought about it. I don't know whether Snore had. Snore and Asset were definitely the two who dropped the first, like, out of our crew, dropped the first emulsion burners on tracks. And I remember looking at, I think one of them was in West Hampstead, on the big West Hampstead Thames Link wall.
Yeah.
And yes, because it was still all the sandstone, and they dropped that Snore Asset thing. I remember just thinking, like, it was like fucking fireworks going off in my mind, because it's it was like the romance surrounding graffiti. When I saw that, it changed. Do you know what I'm saying? And that was like a massive part of why we were so kind of positive with what we were doing, aggressive with what we were doing, regardless of the scene around us, for a long time. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you came in and you figured out, like, okay, we can go level up on top of everything.
Yeah.
And as well as if we play the game properly,
we'll
definitely be that level up. Because you weren't going to come in and just do a mulch piece and then be like, sick, a year later, come back and do another one. No, like, it was on.
Yeah.
We've got a technique.
Yeah, yeah. And we can do the, we can drop these in between every single station on every line, blah, 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 all of that. But that was really like a mentality that, like, I have to credit to Jan, do you know what I mean? And not just because he's no longer here and, you know, to say everything was Jan, but that aspect was purely, like, he'd come up with that, or he'd learned, obviously it had been done before.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, he'd gathered that from somewhere that wasn't going on around us in Camden and Kentish Town.
But this is the thing, though, Mulch background pieces had been done. Mulch bases for pieces had
since
been done.
The start,
but had they been done to the level that he was like, we're going to do this? That's what was brand new.
Yeah, that's what was brand
new. The way he was going to do it.
Yeah, and it was like in the midst of people's obsessions with dubs and getting and dubs right and stuff. And like, also, like, one of the main things which, you know, I want to say about that is a lot of the reasons for that, obviously it was trying to get up in a different way, but it was also because he always used to say, he was like, make sure we get our hands on that masonry paint whenever possible, because he knew, because he used to do like building work with his dad and stuff, he knew
the paint,
and so like so it was always masonry, and one of the reasons was, like, you know, whatever happens to our pieces, this wall is always going to be good for piecing them. So every time we were painting a wall, do you know what I'm saying? Anywhere on track.
You're priming it.
They're priming it. And they're never going to, like, sandblast that off. They're just going to paint it off.
Yeah.
So you've made the... You're priming all of the tracks for people in years to come. And it's like, I think at the time, another thing that we really wanted to happen was to drop pieces and for other people to come next to us.
With mulch.
Yeah, and, like, add to it.
Yeah.
To create this kind of, like, fucking visual revolution of graffiti, because we grew up on with fading chrome dubs, really. On
yeah, we did. That was it.
And it was like you would fly past the tracks, and it was like a bit of a blur of fading chrome dub. Obviously, there was, don't get me wrong,
obviously, there was burners
and there was shit around. Yeah, but
if,
like,
you want to sum it all up, a lot of it was
your average.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what we wanted people to really, like, drop pieces next to it.
Didn't it happen in Seven Sisters or Finsbury Park on that track there?
Yeah, a few people, like,
it did.
A few people got, like, started dropping things again,
and linking on and making walls more colourful.
A little bit,
not only on
a few occasions. Yeah. And, like, I think what happened moreover was that people resented it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And a lot of things got dogged at that time, and that's just how it is. Whatever, it's graph. And I think, like, you know, it was good to see this resurgence recently, because sometimes you do something and you hope that it's gonna catch on
in some way
at the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And I remember feeling like disheartened at the time.
You just put in 10 years.
Yeah, or, you know, even like earlier on, like after we'd done like 3 or 4 years, and there was a lot of beef and there was a lot of shit, and obviously beef is fucking part of graph or whatever, but like there was a lot of missed opportunities, in our opinion, for like something really progressive to happen in graffiti in terms of in terms of challenging the fucking system.
Yeah, let's make London stand up.
Let's basically let's stick it on the authorities collectively. I know that's a bit idealistic and it's not going to work like that, but it could have.
You were inspiring, and you were hoping that you were inspiring people to do what you lot were doing.
Yeah,
this is possible.
Yeah, but I think, you know, sometimes for whatever reason, when you're in the middle of what you're doing, politics can come into play and or beef or whatever, and like it can hold that back. But
stops the
what
flow.
I like to think, especially like after Jan passing and you know, like seeing like Enter and Force and quite a lot of people like dropping like full color things and doing it in a way, especially Enter and Force, like
Enter's my
doing it
favorite,
in a way, Enter like in particular doing it in a way which is like, it just reminded me, and some of the pieces he dropped since Jan died, like, just remind me so much of that Steez, that level of care and stuff. Well, and like, you know, he obviously painted that window down tube thing for Jan. And it was just like, there's a bit of me that just thought, you know what? Whether it was directly connected to what we did or not, it's seeing the cycle. And when you've got a bit of distance from history, and so writers now, they don't know or give a shit about the politics and beef in the early mid-noughties.
No, they don't.
In graph, as much as I don't give a shit about beef in the fucking 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what?
It's
and so they just take it for what it is.
Yeah, I think, though, another thing we can bear in mind here is that I think it is direct.
Mm.
And I don't want to say definitely Force and definitely Enter, but those writers out there now doing these full-colour pieces amazingly on track sides, looking beautiful, they grew up... Yeah. They were young and eyes open looking when you lot were doing those pieces.
Yeah.
And when they hit the game, they get into the culture, they do what the culture offers them.
Yeah.
But then they remember what they've seen and they know the levels they can move to. I think what you lot did, because it was spoke about everywhere, these mulch piece backgrounds, these mulch paintings on track sides, never been done to that level. Ever. Mm. Never. With the repetitiveness that, and you were making London stand up.
Yeah. Like, and I think at that time there was like room to do it because things weren't getting buffed on tracks at least. Mm. And like there was things to look at.
Mm.
We were only doing that because we had things to look at in the 90s. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. From all the people that were killing it then. And then there was this period of like everything buffed and nothing inspiring to look at.
Yeah.
When you go around London on a graffiti sense.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been quite a nice thing. And I hope for Jan before he passed as well, to see Graf get to a stage that we always wanted it to.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was similar in the early noughties, you know, like there's been a lot of talk about right now, whether it was early noughties was as active or the 90s. And I think like across the board, people would say, you know, the last couple of years have been fucking good.
Yeah. Really.
You know, and like, and a lot of, and not so much stupid beef and stuff, because there's opportunity to do something good with your graph.
Yeah.
If you know your shit's going to run for a week or two, or if you know you drop a full color piece, it's going to, that might last for years.
Yeah.
Then the game's a lot more fun again, you know? Exactly. So I think, you know, going back to what Jan and we were trying to do is, you know, like that was what he...
Well, it was open like that for you then. You ended up walking into that beef or whatever, that beef happened, but it was also, that was just a corner. Do you know what I mean? It was, it was a slight corner in the whole scheme of things. It was that you did do that thing, and Jan's ideas and his ideals worked perfectly with you lot.
Yeah.
Like, because the other thing is that you're telling this lovely story now, and I know you're not saying it because Jan's gone, and I know he's due all the credits. But from the outside, we looked at ATG as one thing.
Mm.
We didn't see a leader.
No, it was.
You know what I mean? You all put it in.
Everyone played their position.
Yeah, really. It wouldn't have worked.
No. Like, you know, it's just.
Yeah.
It's more just recognizing the importance of Jan's, you know, spirit and vision in what we did then and you know, and went on to do, and just Yeah, I think like it's kind of bittersweet, but when you lose someone, you're forced to like actually really think about who they were, what they're about, what their morals were, what their vision was, and all the rest. And obviously, being forced to do that a lot with Jan recently. So,
do you with those thoughts and the things that might be missing now, quite sadly, do you then try and think, how can I bring those through today? Like, the reason I do this podcast, Jack.
Yeah.
Not directly, because I started before he'd gone. But the reason I actually put it on and started was because Yang went.
Yeah.
I was just like, well, he would not have allowed it to. He would have not done it. He would have done it.
Yeah.
I wanted him on here.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't sit there with an idea.
Yeah.
I know he had a load of fucking brain. I'm not trying to make out this dude was God.
Yeah.
But I know he had a lot of mad schemes and that. Like, he was that inspiring.
Yeah, yeah.
And so do
yeah.
you find yourself, when you think of him and think of the things that are missing in these months?
Yeah.
Do you think I could probably be a bit more, or I could instill that into these people? They could understand his belief, or...
I mean...
And it might be too early for that type of question as well.
No, I don't think it's too early for that question. Maybe it's too early for me to put it into practice if I've worked out what that could be that is missing now. He's gone. I mean, like, I think a lot of what we did like that, we did together. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like the way I brought in younger people around me, or he brought in younger people around us, was because of this spirit, that this energy that we created together that we wanted to pass on. Or if you look at the music side of ATG in a way that was kind of formed, it was in that way too. And you know, with that side of things, I was maybe more of a backseat,
but it's still the same ethos.
It was all the same thing.
Yeah.
With me and Jan and the rest of us had in our minds. You know, we always like had, it was about trying to pass on that spark. It wasn't like, oh, I want to pass on this particular knowledge about a way of doing this one thing. It was about like passing on the belief and
way of life.
Yeah, the belief in, without sounding too cheesy or broad, the belief in being able to do what you want to do the way you want to do it, regardless of social structures,
or rules of a culture, or
because that's the amazing thing about like graph, as it's been said many times before, but also with us. I just remember thinking, like, I was the youngest in ATG, you know, and getting to a stage where with Jan and Snore and Rest and Rage and Harm and everyone that was involved, getting to this stage, but particularly with Jan, because of the amount of conversations I'd have with him about it every night after painting, the same conversations. It's just like, you know, we're gonna do big things, this is what we're gonna do next, is it, you know, it's always this is what we're gonna do next. And I remember getting to like 16 and being like, oh, I'm like known for graffiti now. Do you know what I'm saying? And I could go to different cities and go, yeah, I'm ATG, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you're ATG, you know, like, and being amazed. And us all being quite like, obviously you're gassed, you're young.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And like, you're still at an age where people aren't really doing that much. Do you know what I'm saying? Outside of school or whatever, in general. But it was that kind of realization and that kind of taking life into our hands and doing what we want to do and making it work together as like a family and supporting each other. And then going on to, you know, it was the world opened up for us. Do you know what I mean? In such a way where it's like, because of our joint mentality. And that's something which we always try to do, following on from our like peak of graph career.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like,
you brought that mentality.
Yeah, but always like the world's there. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
how can
you approach it like this?
Yeah.
But you know, it's it's difficult because a lot of that mentality can be difficult to transfer into life as you the older you get.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Much
whether
harder.
That's like kids or commitments or just what's going on around you. And I think to answer your question, whether there's anything I feel I could do more in Jan's absence, I like to think that everything I do now is like a credit to his lifetime, but also there's not much more I could do that he didn't, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a sense that like what Jan set out to do in the years he was around, he did with full effect. And
Jack, yeah. Man, it's not like I think you should take one of his values, because what I think happened with all of you is that you Jan had a very powerful vibe about him, as we spoke about. But I think the fact that, and whether he waved that one, got all five of you, six of you together, I'm not sure. Yeah. You all played such an integral part. And I think each of you, I look at each of you, I've known you all each for like 10 years plus, and I've seen you all grow in such an amazing way. And not in like a condescending way. I'm just, you know, I've just watched it happen. And I don't know, man, like, again, not condescending, I'm proud of you all in such different ways and love you all in such different ways. And I don't think you're missing anything. I'm not saying you're missing anything. And I think what you'll continue to do will always have the ATG ethos. Yeah. You learned something as a group.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so... I think
what people can take from his life and what he was about, you know, that is just kind of like one thing that he just did is he just grabbed it by the balls, you know what I'm saying, from the start to the finish. And like, that's not always a smooth ride.
It's not always a smooth ride.
Like, I think you know, regardless of him passing young in the way he did, he maxed out life and the opportunities in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think it's like I say, you know, you get older and you might have more responsibilities or your priorities shift in terms of what you want to make happen.
And what you have to make happen as well.
What you have to make happen, yeah. And kind of bridging worlds. And I think, you know, I guess it's worth saying this is my opinion on Jan.
Yeah.
You know,
as one of
my old friends, this is my opinion on Jan. And like, I don't wanna say anything that is deemed insensitive to other people. So I'm, you know, but in my opinion, Jan wasn't ready or willing to transfer the energy that he mastered growing up and through his younger years throughout his 20s into a more controlled adult setting. And I'm not just talking about Graf, because you can be a controlled adult and Graf all your fucking life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think in many ways, that's a good thing.
Mm.
It's not a good thing that he passed young. We all miss him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's only going to have negative connotations. But it's good that he didn't force himself to do something which he would not be happy in.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying? And Jan was never going to take an office job.
No.
Or, you know, like...
Society was never going to... Whatever society's measures were, he wasn't going to be ruled by them at all.
And some people were like that.
Yeah.
And I think, like... It's good to understand that with some people, and you know, good friends of Jan for 17 years, and like, you know, watched watched everything the way it manifested. Front seat, do you know what I mean? With him. And I don't think it's deeply sad for people that loved him. You know what I'm saying? That having to live life without him. That's the sad thing about the situation.
Yeah.
Him dying is not sad for him.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's not. And I know that's like...
No, but that's the fact.
Yeah.
It's the people that are left behind. It's his sister, it's his mum, it's his dad, it's you, it's Jamie, it's Jack, it's, you know, Jake.
And I know, like, once you're gone, so it's not sad for anyone that dies. But also what I mean is, like, it's... Jan, like, was just full on across the board till the end. Mm. And he was accepting of that. And that was his life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, drugs aside... And there's things we can talk about with drugs or lessons to be learned, maybe. But the main point is that Jan wouldn't have looked back at his lifetime if he could look back now and say, I missed out on anything. He didn't miss a trick.
Mm.
You know, he, I think he knew that if he wanted to, if he wanted to kind of change everything he was about, it would be a long process that may or may not happen.
And also might completely take him off the person he wanted to be.
Yeah, it would.
He fully, like you just said, like he lived life to the full. Like I literally just pictured a vial.
Yeah.
Like a little, not a crack vial, but you know, like a science room vial. Completely full and overspilling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that was him.
Yeah.
There was no, there wasn't like any wastage, it didn't seem. And yeah, the drugs were.
Yeah.
But there was no wastage in it.
Nah. And also, like, he was that definition of an anarchist in spirit. You know, there's a lot of people who say, I'm an anarchist. And, you know, I'm part of an anarchist group and we do this and that or whatever. Do you know what I'm saying? But he was an absolute anarchist in the sense that he flourished, his creative spark, his brilliance came from chaos.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whether that was like putting on raves,
yeah,
graphing, whatever. That was when he was like super inspired and like some of the ideas he'd come out with were just, you'd only someone who had a true like anarchist spirit could even fathom them, you know,
and
what
yeah.
he wanted to do. And I think that was where he was always going to be happy and creatively inspired, you know, as if everything was... I remember meeting him in Berlin. We were on the way to that exit festival and like met up with him outside the station in Berlin and we were all sitting there drinking. He just like jumped out of a taxi, like, you know, like tins in his hand, like off his face, like, let's go. I'm not even like, yo, how's it going?
No,
like,
no,
what's
no.
going on? What are we doing? It was just like, let's go. Just, like,
on.
Straight away, like bombing on things, like literally like fucking creasing because of the situation. You know, there are a lot of times like, you look at him, you just like, you just fucking love it. This is it for you. Do you know what I'm saying? And like times down the line where me and him have had to sit down and I don't know, like work on like a proposal for something, and you can just see the interest just fucking draining from his face. You know what I'm saying?
Him having to try and lock onto that shit.
Yeah, no, he wanted to make
go
things happen.
Yeah, yeah, we're doing it. That's fine. We'll do it now.
Yeah, by while he's doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? He's wanting to fucking like bake a cake while riding a bike.
Yes,
it wasn't
exactly.
like I'm gonna sit down and bake a cake.
Yeah, yeah. He had to deliver the cake, but he's baking it whilst delivering.
Yeah,
it. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what he like. You know, me and him would often clash over the years in ways of thinking about things.
What was the What was the first thing you did after? Not after graffiti, because I know graffiti continued throughout.
Yeah.
But do you remember the first? This isn't a piece we're painting. This isn't a dub we're putting together. This isn't a trackside train, whatever. Mm. Do you remember your first bit of creativity that wasn't graffiti? What it was?
With
Would it have been a...
I did a show in Kentish Town.
Flexed and Pooch.
Yeah, yeah. 2005, 2006. Which is when me and like Monkey started doing more character stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into all of that. And then I asked Jan to put something in. I asked a bunch of people to put some paintings in for a show we're doing in Kentish Town. Jan, I don't know where they are. Someone must have them, but he did these canvases with like ATG symbols as like lava. So he like dripped high gloss paint on the canvas in the shape of an ATG symbol and let it dry. And then painted over that all in brown so that there was just like a relief of a symbol, but like looking like lava, but what? That brown lumps of symbols.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, underneath the canvas.
Yeah.
And then on each one of the lumps, he then faded in like other shades of browns, the reds, the orange, the yellow, and made them all of like blocks of lava. He did like a series of them. They were amazing. And I did that.
And was that probably the start of, okay, we might have another world we can start jumping into here?
Yeah.
Like, and using our same ethos.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was. It was, but it was kind of... Jan wasn't really interested in making that, definitely not street art.
No,
never interested in that. And he could paint amazing canvases, but like I say, he was much more into, I guess, the energy behind the ideas, and definitely like if there was a rebellious aspect to them. And yeah, he wasn't always that good at sitting still, you know what I mean? So it's like with that thing, it was I started getting more into art, and Jan was still painting a bit, and I think he went away traveling for quite a while at that point. He went to China for a while with his brother, and he went to South America for a while. Some people, and then came back in like 2006, 2007. So I remember him being away, traveling on and off for like a couple of years.
Yeah,
and that was kind of other people would like rest had gone off and was kind of deep in the Buddhist thing. Snor was at university. And at one point, I was kind of painting on my own, doing a lot of rooftops and stuff, and which is what kind of led me to get into doing more art, because I wanted to switch it up, and I wasn't really... ATG is like a graph thing, had simmered down a little bit for the time being.
Mm.
And then I guess doors opened in the sense that I was exploring that, Jan was exploring life, and then... We were all back around at one point, and it was like the energy of like ATG was still there, and it was still like we were still a group of friends that hung out a lot. Some of us had drifted off, but there was a core of us that was still always around, and like it wasn't really our priority to. To do everything again in terms of like getting up in London. We still painted, but it wasn't that. I was so focused. And so I think the mix of like some of us getting into art and just everything opened up a little bit.
Well, to come back as well together with all those influences.
All those influences. And it was like really what we love doing is partying.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It was like we were always that way, but by this time it was like, you know, we were like early 20s, late teens, early 20s.
Fully old enough to properly party.
Get stuck in.
Exactly, yeah. And have a few years with you.
Like,
yeah.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was, we wanted to do, like, I think I did a t-shirt with Kung Fu. Yeah, the night with the hip hop night, Kung Fu.
Yeah.
They released
what tee was it?
Like, just a red symbol on a grey t-shirt.
I remember. And they done it in grey as well. Grey with a red logo.
Grey with a red logo. So that was the first ever ATG tee.
I remember them.
I remember giving them to my... Yeah.
Charlie and them like sent me a box down.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So, and then that got, kind of got us thinking and it was like about how we could move forward as a crew and do things differently and kind of like not just be a graffiti crew. And so that's where that all came in, basically. It was just us keeping things moving. Tim, we got into all of that, and then Jan basically, he just always knew everyone. You know what I mean? Jan always was so well connected from when we were young. And then like when we came up with the idea to kind of turn ATG into something different, he was heading up the music and the rave side of it, and that was where he was like passionate and was making things happen.
Isn't it like, nuts that he was always like that? You're like, you're doing so much, and then all of a sudden you're like, when did you have time to know these people?
Where did that come from? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's nuts. But then, you know, that's...
So that was his calling. The music came and he's like, I can take that.
Yeah. That was his calling. And I think...
Was that the same time you got the Kentish studio?
Yeah. Right,
was that the first one?
Yeah, it was like 2007.
Yeah.
We started all of this kind of stuff. Putting out teas and putting out parties and things like that.
You had an amazing space in Kentish.
Yeah.
Was it four rooms or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was like a kind of...
Sick.
I guess it was a top floor flat on the high street that this guy wasn't using for anything, and it was kind of a bit mashed up. But it was,
and it became the space for all four of you to. It was four of you at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
all four of you to be there.
Yeah.
And you were producing work in there, getting the t-shirts made,
I think like again. You know, when you come from that graph background and being so involved in it, if you do put your mind to something else and you have that same energy, it can, you can have good results in it. And
if you know how to translate it,
If you translate the energy, right. And I think those days it was like a real... I look back at that as like a real learning curve. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of creatively and just in life, you know, there's no like rule book to how you move on from just being a graffiti crew to doing something together in a different way. And like, I'm so glad we did it because it's a big chapter of a very important chapter of our lives, you know. And I think graffiti teaches you so much about yourself and about your environment and about what you're capable of. And then during that period it taught us so much about how you actually work together with people. Do you know what I'm saying? Like how you like form like kind of business relationships to people almost, or how you communicate with people. In the outside world, not that we were like socially inept.
No,
but like if you spend that long painting, not talking to anyone,
it's just a learning curve, man.
You do get a bit like that.
I think you obviously working together is the way you did in the early 2000s.
Yeah,
you know, producing those massive, you know, trackside walls and everything else you achieved together. You kind of you work off the back of that. We can do this in this room, and we can make this type of work. But yeah, it's I suppose what a lot of mistakes happened, and then a lot of
just like
new things, new experiences.
Yeah, and just in terms of
it brought you somewhere different.
Like, there's lots of examples of how we grew as people, but I think with Jan, and you think about the first parties we all put on, but you know he was the main guy doing it, and where he kind of ended up doing, the way he was doing parties towards the end, and the whole thing was just like, when I look back at it, it's mad, you know, it's crazy, and not just doing raves in clubs in London, because you know, that's something that's quite approachable if you want to do it. But the way Jan was just like, suddenly he pulled something out of the bag, which was like, oh, by the way, we're going to go, we're doing a party in LA. You know what I mean? So he's like orchestrating it all. He pulled string and it was like,
that's oh, by the way. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
We've got some funding from him and this blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're going to get through this and do that. And there were massive ideas.
Yeah.
For someone of that age.
He had no right. Really, he had no right.
The kind of things he was doing were the kind of things that would be more common if someone had been born into like an industry family.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Or 5-10 years more experience. 5 or 10 years more experience within these cultures.
Yeah.
Then you can make those moves.
Well, that's it.
And he's like, no.
Nah, he went straight
in. I've got the idea, we're in.
Yeah, and it was all mad.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it just makes me not thinking about something. Like, he did so many parties. He didn't get to all of them. Obviously, he did things in Iceland, the parties, and did a few in Outlook in Croatia. But yeah, like this, the LA one, for instance, the way it all kind of like fell apart was like epic. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all going sweet. You've got this warehouse, everything's cool. Like, everything's good. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
The warehouse is getting like packed. And then before you know it, like the police have come through, shut the whole thing down because of like licensing issues. Then you've got all these like gangbangers, proper angry, wanting their money back. You know, because they're like, oh, what the fuck with ATG, DTA, who them, anyone wearing them t-shirts getting fucked up? You've got police holding them back. Then you've got helicopters over above and you just got that fucking us lot jumping into taxis and getting out of the area. And it's just like, shit like that only could have happened with Jan in my lifetime anyway. Do you know what I mean? There's not many people who orchestrate that kind of like madness. And it's like, obviously we all play our positions in it and this, some things I'll blame on him, some things you blame on me, do you know what I'm saying, if he's still here.
What a crap,
man. But it's like, you know, and then it's like a few years down the line it'll be like, oh yeah, Jack, like, oh, we're gonna go to like come up to Glastonbury with me like 2 weeks before, we're gonna paint a mural for these guys, and then like, you know, you do some characters and that, and then like, yeah, we'll just get some tickets out of here and sell them whatever. And I was like, all right, cool, sounds good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. And then you go up and then like we do the mural, everyone loves us, it's all good. We've got a little caravan given to us to stay in while we're there. Obviously we're having fun, so we stay in the caravan for an extra day and then that turns to another day and like we start painting things around the site. Before we know it, we fucking completely bomb the site, you know what I'm saying? And then like we're, you know, getting the train back, calling the lady, like asking about our tickets. She's like, have you not heard? Like, Emily Evers is furious. She's been driving around in like a fucking Jeep all day, like looking at all your graph. Like, she wants to find out who you are, she's on your Facebook pages.
What?
You know, all these kind of mad fingers. Like,
only
yeah,
Jan, only with Jan.
Only with Jan. Do you know what I mean? And we got blacklisted. They found out who we were through the people we did the mural for because they threatened to throw them off site as well.
They had to.
And like, they had to, yeah, I think they gave up our names. And then we were blacklisted from that year, and I was just like, I was pissed, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, you know, obviously I played a part in it, but I like to blame Jan in that situation. And he'd be like, no, I was saying we should have chilled. But, you know, then I was just at home, like, oh, well, whatever, just fucking get on with it, no ticket.
Yeah.
Burnt a few bridges, life goes on. But then Jan went back to Glastonbury. So we got we had photos of us at the entrances. Don't let these people in. Jan turned up in like a fucking wig and sunglasses and is bombing there around the festival. And like,
so fuck this.
Out of like,
yeah,
just
fuck
shit.
You. Yeah. Yeah, I'm coming back.
Coming back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't stop me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Such a weird thing for them to try and do, though, man. And you know,
yeah,
it's good you respect it. You're like, right, yeah, cool, I've been kicked off, I get it. And Jan was being Jan. It's not even about respect or disrespect. It's, no, I'm doing this thing.
But it's a perfect example.
Perfect.
Of worlds fusing.
Yeah.
And how you do that and how Jan couldn't always manage to and didn't want to.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, a lot of people would be like, all right, you know what? We've just gotten in with these people in Glastonbury.
We're going to
love our mural.
Yeah. we could be here next year. Yeah,
we'll just get cozy.
We've got a camper.
We've got a thing now. Yeah. Like Yam is still obviously we grew up smashing Glastonbury.
Yeah, exactly. You know that was years
that
of
was
it.
Like, that was where Yam was like in his element. You know, doing the blockbusters on the Portaloos when we were all off our faces in Glastonbury. That was us. That was us.
Yeah.
I mean, really and truly, outside of all the other stuff we talked about with London and the,
you lot like, came to being there brought you lot.
Yeah, that was like
gave you what you really wanted to do.
Yeah. That was that fucking all out. And at that time, it was
the rest of the year was actually for that, basically, in a way.
But the police, like Glastonbury, around them times, and obviously before, police didn't stop you from painting because it was still such a free for all that, like, they didn't know what was allowed and what wasn't.
Yeah.
And so that was what,
just how it was.
What we all thrived on, you know. And I think there was no way that just because you're getting given tickets now and given the space of the mural that you're not going to go
that and doesn't change
the whole entire site.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, I remember how excited you were being able to do it before anyone's there. Do you know what I mean? So, and there was, the lights weren't even on. So we were like running around in the dark, like fucking tripping, being like, what's going on? You know, we can see little like lights of cars driving a distance, setting things up, and he's climbing over generators and climbing up stages, doing symbols and everything. And it's just like, you know, you have things like that. And then you're just like, oh, whatever. Do you know what I mean? And there was other, like, you know, the fucking last year we were at Glastonbury together, last June.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's staying in a yurt. Like Cara Delevingne had let him stay.
What?
You know what I'm saying? So there was always, he knew so many people and he did so much, he had such a way with people that he could do stuff like that. And I remember the fallout from Glastonbury that year. I remember fallout some other shit that we got ourselves into in festivals or whatever, where people were like, we're gonna fuck you up when we see you. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
or you lot went like, a step too far.
Yeah, yeah. Or like just super upset.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how, oh, it's such a disappointment, ADG, we thought you were such nice guys, all of that, and it's like, and then him just turned it around in the most spectacular way. Do you know what I mean? And he could do that in front of your face. He could make something that
he
completely outrage someone and then have them like cuddling him within the space of 10 minutes.
Well, because he could explain things as well. He could explain the anarchist in him because he grew up that way.
Yeah,
this wasn't like, you're not seeing a mad kid here, and you're not like, this isn't like a no. I'll tell you why I'm like this. Yeah. This is why you love me.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why you love me. Oh, yeah, of course. All right, yeah.
That's it. And it's that's like not something I've really seen at all.
He was very, very, like, it's quite a weird thing to say about Jan, actually, but he was very mature for his age.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a weird thing. I've never really thought that before, but he kind of is. Like,
he was like hyper-intelligent. And like very emotionally intelligent, you know. So it's, if he's giving you a tough guy persona, stripped back tough guy persona, that's because he wants to, and there's various reasons why he's doing that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then vice versa.
Yeah. It wasn't. It wasn't loose.
No. It wasn't like I'm just doing this because I just want to be bad.
No.
I'm going to be like this because I want to just be some overtly positive. You know.
Yeah. What
I
mean? Yeah.
Like everything was theatre. You know, with him, and I think so many experiences like that with him, where you know sometimes you'd be furious with him, and then it's like, without a doubt, you'd be laughing about it like pretty soon after, you know. And he's just, because he's such a like such a mischievous man.
Did he always admitted his faults as well, didn't he?
Was
it very rare that he'd fuck up and be like, no, fuck you, man? Maybe in the time.
Yeah, at the time maybe. But he would.
I think that's probably why you could have had the laughs afterwards, because he would 100%. Admit it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. When you're back and you're sitting around the table and you're and it's like, it's all just a story, then it all comes up. Do you know what I'm saying? Because you know that everything's just whatever.
It's past, yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah. We're still here.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's some people say like nothing matters.
Yeah.
You know, and that can be taken in like different ways. Some people will be like, oh, that's a horribly negative way of looking at things. Everything matters.
Everything.
But it means the same thing that nothing matters.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, and he was a fan of that. I was a fan of that with him. He's like, yeah, we know we're morally intact people.
Yes.
Yeah, but shit fucking happens.
Yeah.
You know?
And
chaos ensues because of life.
Let's not make a thing of this.
Don't make a thing of it.
Let's not make a thing of it. It's cool.
No.
Yeah, nothing matters. It's fine. And not in a matters, man. No, fuck this world. No, not that.
Whatever.
It's cool. It's fine. We're in a good place. Like,
me and him had like roll around fights.
Yeah.
You know, like, and countless.
Yeah.
Like tiffs. But that is just, you know, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, especially having like a intense, like, you share a vision with someone. Your egos. It's a valuable thing to understand that all of that stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All of the conflict doesn't matter. All of the mad shit that happens, because it's just additional details to a more important thing.
More important and subject.
Think, you know, that's what Jan was. That's something. One of the main things I took from Jan as a person. You know what I mean? And one of the main things I learned from him as a person, because life's too short to like you know, hold grudges or to let little political things get in the way of a friendship, but also like making things happen with someone. That was Jan till the end. Like even. At Glastonbury last year, after Glastonbury, he got chatting with Banksy's manager, and then it's the same kind of thing, you know what I mean? It's like another phone call from Jan being like, basically, chatting with Banksy's manager, and they're quite interested in us maybe going out there and doing a project, seeing a hotel, blah, blah, blah. And like, for me, it's just like, given all of the stuff I've explained about, like, my alarm bells are just ringing, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've got like a kid now, I'm like trying to be a bit more settled, and I'm just thinking, what, like, we're gonna get fucking run out there by, like,
this isn't gonna be idea. Just what,
yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Like, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, I know you're telling me this, but what's gonna happen?
Like,
I know this is an offer, but what are you really saying?
That's it, yeah. And I think, I'm not gonna lie, I was very reluctant to go. And do it, because I know just that what can happen with like me and him. And it was a very different experience.
I was gonna say, it must have been really strange.
Yeah, a very different experience.
Married, kids.
Yeah. I mean, and even, you know, where Jan was at last year was a real place of reflecting, of reflection, and so it was kind of like we were suddenly there, you know, out in Palestine, and me and Jan have always known, perhaps out of all of ATG, we've always known that our families' political backgrounds and kind of motivations and way of seeing the world are probably most similar.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And
I'm both vocal
on it.
Families, like vocal families, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, obviously differences.
Yeah.
But like any fans.
Yeah.
So,
but both politically minded families,
knew that we should at some stage transfer our energy into trying to better things for people in some way. Do you know what I'm saying? And do that through ATG.
Yeah, I mean, that'd start to happen with the parties, but maybe not so consciously.
Yeah.
Was all of that stuff again from the outside was giving you lot had formed this whole thing, and now you're giving all this stuff back, and you were doing these events. But in what you were about to take on with Palestine and these thoughts, and also with other things he was up to, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, I mean,
that was new, wasn't it?
Like what we've done, like all of our lives, knowing each other, has been for the most part progressive.
Yeah.
Inspiring for people.
Yeah.
But what we always wanted to do and were doing was to kind of actually use ATG as a force for direct change, a direct action against certain things.
Yeah.
Because that's how we've been raised.
Do you know what? What you did previously, yes, it was inspiring and you gave people, like I said, with the raves, but it was also you lot with the stars, no matter what. In all of those instances, ATG won. Yeah. What you were about to do was like use all of that and be level with and push further a cause above and equal to ATG. Because,
definitely.
That was and the I next move. Using the same...
Jan had done lots of great stuff, you know, working with young people.
Mm.
I've done a bunch of stuff working with young people. We've done politically kind of minded things, campaign work. But it wasn't under the umbrella of ATG,
no,
so to speak, beyond the fact that it was me and Jan doing it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And I think we both shared a vision that changed and was changing with our lives from when we were 14, do you know what I'm saying? And everything we wanted to do to where, you know, I am now and where Jan left us. And I think being in Palestine together and knowing that we're in a place that you don't wind, obviously, we're not there to wind shit up, you know, like...
Doesn't matter. There's enough.
Yeah,
the springs are fucking tight. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
we're
yeah.
here to. This is way bigger.
Yeah.
Than us.
Is that Trump's helicopter?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one of the things that makes me most sad about losing Jan as a friend and as like, you know, a partner. In life is that there was so much more, you know, we could have done together and is now happening in his absence, which is great, you know, like a lot of his friends are put together with the fundraising stuff to continue his projects in Nepal and I hope to continue our project out in Palestine.
What did you do in Palestine?
Well, we visited a lot of places, schools, refugee camps within Palestine. We were shown around Jerusalem and saw a bit of Israel, but then we were staying at the Waldorf Hotel and exploring the area. And the idea was to try and work out what we can do as people and as ATG, and what we can bring to the region, you know, to try and create some kind of positive change out there. And so that's why we were there. So it was like, out of all the experiences with Jan, it was the last time I saw Jan was sitting on the balcony of the Waldorf Hotel, looking over the dividing wall into Israel from Palestine, and talking about, you know, like what we're gonna do and like there and where we're gonna kind of how we're gonna move forward together at this stage of life and what we could do with ATG that would make sense to us in this stage of life. And I spoke to him after that, you know, that was early September and he died in December. And following on from that, you know, me and Jan would always have a time out from each other and just chat on WhatsApp or whatever. And that was the last time I chatted to him was on Boxing Day to talk about whether we wanted to go and paint something on Christmas Day. Yeah. And so I think, as sad as it is that that was, you know, where things ended for Jan in his physical life, it also, like, for me, in a personal way, and I'm sure this story might be similar to other people in other ways, but for me, it like completed a journey, you know, of our friendship, you know, and like, I don't want to say that, it's a hard thing to say because I'm alive still, do you know what I mean? And I've got kids and I've got, you know, this future to look into. And so I don't want to be like, oh, thanks for completing a journey of our friendship. It's not like that, but it's like, when I look back at it, from when he was guiding me through painting pieces, when I was a kid, to all the other stuff we did, you know, like with the raves and things over the years, traveling the world, and him kind of, you know, that whole journey together, and then us kind of being grown men and kind of doing something huge, embarking on something huge out in somewhere like Palestine, because it was something we believed in. You know, I can take something from that, in the sense that he gave so much to myself and to people around him, and yeah, in a personal sense, it's, no matter all of the kind of drama or the tiffs you have with someone growing up who you're close to, when you look at it like that, there's nothing but like gratitude.
Hey, that is pure love, and I think you making it, you stating it the way you have, like the journey and finishing it, is purely positive, because what you've done is like, look, you now know, look what I've got. I've got this whole thing. It's like, it's finishing a book and putting it on your shelf because you love it.
Yeah.
You're not going to leave it on the tube for someone else to read. You're not going to. This is beautiful, and I've got this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And you're not carrying it all the time in your bag. You're not going to try and let it, you're not going to let it affect your life in a negative way. You're going to put all this positive information that you've built and this story you've made with your closest friend. And you can now close that chapter on such a high note. Unbelievably sad, Jack.
Yeah.
Unbelievably sad.
Yeah.
But mate, like, what a fucking journey.
Yeah, completely.
You and the pain you're feeling now, fully understandable, but it's, you, and it's going to hurt forever.
Yeah.
But you're going to have that.
Yeah.
That flair in there.
Yeah, 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 completely. And, you know, I hope when the time's right, you know, I'd like to do some of the things that we spoke about. Especially, like, you know, with his family involved, hopefully, because a lot of Jan's mentality and vision can be credited to his mum and sister,
and his dad,
motivated him and inspired him growing up. Because, you know, alone, you know, we're not, no one's alone in this situation. But I guess with me and Jan, in terms of ATG, it was either me or him kind of deciding on what we do next or leading the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, now he's gone, there was obviously part of me which is, feels like, well, that was our thing. And you know, so it's not always so straightforward to know what to do.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
But don't,
without him.
Yeah. Don't put the pressure on yourself.
No. And you know, luckily to myself and to Jan's family, there's so many people there willing to support and willing to you know, continue what yeah. in his lifetime. I'm, you know, really
in various
really touched,
ways.
Really touched by that. I'm yeah. really like happy for Jan, really for his legacy, because you know, it. I think you're always gonna say when someone passes, oh, you know what? All right, I'm gonna never paint anything with my own name ever again.
Hmm.
Only gonna paint that name.
Yeah.
Or you know, I'm. Every month we're gonna do this and that, and the reality of it is that it's not easy if you don't have a big people around you that are willing to help you.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think.
But real life continues, man. Yeah. Like real life continues. You're here. You're sitting yeah. here. You know what I mean? You're having to live it, and
yeah.
You know what, Jack? Though, man, I think I really admire whether this goes in or not. I really admire the way you've dealt with it.
Yes.
You haven't gone out and painted a million pieces and, you know, and you've kept it very, well, I don't even know, but from what I do know, you've been family orientated and close yeah. circle orientated and made sure that your people are right
yeah.
and well. And
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, it's must been the most... definitely the most challenging,
testing and challenging
thing probably of my life. And also, you know, like there, you know, people, Jan would have liked to have had the kids at some stage, of course, you know what I mean. And it was Jan at some point probably wanted to get a bit more focused or settled. I don't know, you know, what I do, you know, from certain conversations. And I think one thing you'd always say to me is that how happy it was for me that I've found that and pursuing it and managing it to kind of like
you're working
hold
it.
That down. Yeah. And so, you know, a big help has been having a family around. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, as soon as you have kids, as you know, it's like you hard to think about yourself, and I think it can be easier if you've, you know, like my youngest son was born on February the 6th, he and died on December 26th, so that's just over a month after he died. When you're kind of like looking at your kid who knows nothing of situation, even my oldest is only 2,
yeah,
you know, at well, he's about to turn 2, and he met Jan a few times and knows Jan's face, but obviously still doesn't know the situation. And I think that has forced me to play a role quite like staunchly, I guess,
yeah.
in terms of
you're playing it very carefully, and
yeah, because you kind of have to, and
yeah,
probably better leave it there.
Amazing guy, man.
Yeah,
I really appreciate you coming around, Jack. No, and I haven't had the chance to talk to many people about it, and I'm glad we just listening to you and hearing more has been lovely for me, man. I hope it's been alright for you talking.
It's good. It's useful to talk, man. Like I say, it's in this kind of environment, and you know, given how long you both known, it's useful to talk about these things. And sometimes it's not as easy in big social situations because it's a bit of a minefield of emotions. Hopefully,
look, man, he's a man to be admired, and that's for sure, and to be inspired by it, and he left an amazing legacy, and yes, obviously too soon, and we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We can only really smile.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, nice one,
dude. Well, that was amazing. Loads of love and respect to Jack for coming over and chatting in such an honest and open way about our friend, and I know it wasn't easy. Jan really was inspiring. His force was one to be reckoned with, and his creative output, unrivaled. From writing graffiti to being entrepreneurial, putting on raves to travelling to other countries, and spreading the ATG word and bringing art to more people's lives. Jan is inspiration. We'll never forget that. Love to Jan's family, mum, dad, sister and brother. The ATG family, Snore, Elmo, Raids, Intro, Fatso, Ashore, Suda, Illaman, Close One, LV, Alex Session and all the rest of you. And all the many other members of the extended family, because ATG doors were always open. The movement doesn't stop. It won't stop. Jan ATG forever. We won again. Even though there were an awful lot of us out there feeling the loss of our friend. He would want you to look at his work, feel his vibe, and be on that team. Art wins every battle. We love you, brother. This is dedicated to Asset, Veko, Trip, K-Bag, Lover, Mint, Ganja, Robbo, George Hate, Mood, Rizzo, Raze, Evil, Zero, TU, Fed, and all the other inspirational culture movers that have passed on. Love your city and love your culture. This is F24.